At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint. It is Tuesday, the 11th of March. You're listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day. On today's show, looking at a variety of things, obviously, as we get just over 50 days of President Trump's second term, quite a few things obviously happening in terms of meetings, the situation between Ukraine and Russia. Ukraine launching drone strikes against the Russians. Are we any further down the road to a peace settlement there? Also, a lot of tariffs coming in over the week as well. Are we going to have a tariff war? Mark Carney, who was the governor of the Bank of England, takes over at Canada, replacing Trudeau. Is that going to make it? Are there adults in the room there? We might bring Greenland in there. We might bring Syria. We might bring ceasefire holding in Israel. Who knows? But just to first off, thanks to our sponsor, St. James Global Private Clients, announcing their expansion into Spain for expert financial advice on Spanish tax residents and to maximize your retirement income. Contact St. James Global Private Clients at info@stjamesglobal.com. St. James Global, protecting your assets and growing your wealth. If you want to get involved with today's show, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
First off, let's have a look at what the papers are saying today. Most of the front pages in the UK have photographs of the burning tanker and cargo ship which collided off the Yorkshire coast. They capture the orange flames and blackened hulls of the vessels alongside the clouds of thick smoke and steam as water was pumped onto them by firefighting ships. The Daily Mail calls it horror in the North Sea, asking how a vessel carrying sodium cyanide could plough into a tanker full of US Navy jet fuel in broad daylight. Foul play not ruled out is the Telegraph's headline, although the paper goes on to say early indications suggest this is not the case. It quotes a maritime expert as saying, "I would rule out any conspiracies or terrorism to as near zero as you can get at this point." Under the headline, "Eco-disaster fears after ships collide," the Times reports that emergency crews are battling to avoid what it calls Britain's biggest environmental disaster in a generation. It says the East Yorkshire coast is a haven for seabirds and marine life with sensitive habitats. Meanwhile, the Eye says Greenpeace has warned it's too early to say how much damage there will be, but the speed of the response will be a key factor. The Mirror describes it as a catastrophe. Its opinion column says that shipping is crucial to Britain's economy. Meanwhile, the anger in the Sun that the Sentencing Council has refused a government request that it considers its new guidance for judges in England and Wales. This is the thing about a two-tier system which favoured defendants from ethnic minorities. Under the headline, "Legal Weasel," the paper's opinion column accuses the judges of being guilty of monstrous overreach. Finally, the FT suggests the row that's engulfed Reform UK in recent days might have put Elon Musk off supporting the party. After a visit to the US in December, Nigel Farage announced that the Tesla and SpaceX boss was considering making a donation to reform, but the FT said it's been told by keep people close to the billionaire he would now support a credible alternative party. So those headlines from the top, The Mirror, catastrophe, North Sea inferno. Catastrophic, says the Metro. The Daily Mail, horror in the North Sea. The iPaper, jet fuel spills into North Sea. The Sun, hellfire. The Guardian, number of jobless indefensible, says PM, amid criticism over cuts. Meanwhile, the Financial Times, Wall Street plunges after Trump's refusal to rule out a recession. The Telegraph leads with farmers hit again in Rainer land grab. The Times, eco-disaster fears after ships collide in the North Sea. The Express has a photograph of the king on the front. And finally, the Daily Star. Daily Star leads on a warning from what it describes as boffs that AI bots will take over the internet, filling it with techie gobbledygook that humans will not be able to understand. Our AI kills the net. And so for those, for better or worse, are your headlines on this Tuesday, the 11th of March.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And talking of techie gobbledygook, I'm delighted to bring on today's panel. To my left, with a very quiet chair, Timothy Stafford. Timothy, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Giles.
Good to have you with us, as always. Are you tickety-boo? I think that's a yes. Yes, wake up. Yes, thank you.
Affirmative.
And Dr. Jerry Hagen joins us as well. Morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Giles. Good to see you again.
It is indeed.
And that big star in the sky is back.
Yes, indeed. The sun, you mean?
Yes, indeed. The word.
Peeking through the... It's been rather damp, hasn't it? To put it mildly.
It's been persisting down.
Persisting down.
Yes.
If you want to get involved, if you want to get involved with the show, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And already got some people coming in on the WhatsApps. Now, on the poll of polls that I now run every time we do a viewpoint, the question today, hopefully, the question today is, and you can vote on the poll, do you think a peace deal can be done between Russia and Ukraine? At the moment, 59% say yes, 40% say no, and 1% say they don't know. So there you go. Peace deal in Ukraine. I mean, a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine. Obviously, we have we've had Zelensky in Saudi Arabia. He's been doing the rounds since the other week's disastrous White House session at the Oval House. Then he met with the King, and then he met with European leaders, and now he's arrived in Saudi Arabia for talks with Rubio, I believe. Panel, any thoughts on this?
I can't see how Ukraine can get a peace deal that would satisfy Ukraine. Putin's going to win. There will be a peace deal because it can't keep going on forever, but Ukraine almost certainly are going to have to give up territory. Interestingly, like that, Trump seems that thinks that that's exactly what should happen. I'm not sure where he's coming from. Is it because he made pre-election promises he would get peace in Ukraine and Russian border? I don't really know what. He seems to have a political strategy of throwing everything up in the air and seeing what happens. Weird.
Yes, I think as it stands, with the 18% of the Ukraine having been successfully held for a period of time now by the Russians, that they're pretty well entrenched in that line. And even though there's a hovering Belarus over the top and a valiant defence by the Ukrainians, For them to be attritional and go back towards the Russian border on 1,000 kilometres of a front line is unlikely. So it's a bit of a stalemate. I don't think the Russians are winning. The number of their mechanised equipment, the numbers that have been destroyed, is limiting them, and they can't use the air either at the moment. But over time, with the withdrawal of U.S. intelligence and the factor of HIMARS not being there and so on, it was going to make it very difficult for them. So I don't see that Ukraine can actually win in driving the Russians back, but I don't think the Russians have ever got the necessary power to overpower and reach Kiev. I can't see that. So it is requiring of some sort of other mechanism to bring this to an end. But whether the Ukrainians will be prepared to cede any of their sovereign nation is a very difficult question. And I don't think so. I think that's extremely unlikely. What I don't like is Trump's continuation of denying intelligence to the Ukrainians. So that's a major, and possibly the alleviation of sanctions on the USSR.
Oh, USSR.
Russia, yeah.
Russia, shall we call them? I don't like it, and if World War III ever comes about, it will be because the Russians win this war. It will be catastrophic for Europe to have that sort of advance by the Russians. And I think that is why, well, I know that is why, European leaders are assembling and rearming and, for that matter, manufacturing more greatly. Thankfully, the F-16s that Ukraine have, even though the USA is denying parts now or maintenance programs, the European Europe as a whole should be able to provide that sort of cover. It's a complex situation. I think Zelensky is being maligned. I don't think he wants anything more than a return to the sovereignty of his own nation. I mean, who wouldn't want that?
I mean, the thing with taking out the intelligence so quickly, it means that they don't have... It's not a question of having spies over the border. It's things like the Patriot missile system, isn't it? And this kind of thing, which is, which is again, tying one hand behind the back, behind Ukraine's back. Just have a quick look at what people are saying on Talk Radio Europe Official on the post beneath the poll of polls. Morning, Paul. The war will come to an end, but not on Ukraine's terms. Ian says it will mean Ukraine's capitulation. Mary says only on Ukraine's terms. Michelle says, I cannot ever give up on peace. Just seeing what else is coming on there as well. Just looking at other comments coming in. Thanks for those. Meanwhile, good morning. Gary says, top voice panel, by the way. Thank you, Gary. Good to have you with us as well. Now, so obviously, you said before that, Jerry, that Trump has thrown everything up in the air and seeing where everything lands, and no more perhaps with the situation with Europe and NATO and getting people scrambling around and reevaluating. I mean, this is obviously an interesting time, to put it mildly.
Well, on this one, I think Trump was the point, and he's not the first president to complain that US are doing more than their fair share of money and resources into NATO compared to Europe. Some European countries put very little percentage of the GDP into NATO and sit back and expect others to take the brunt. Small countries, yes, big countries as well. But if you go to the Baltic states, where Russia is a real genuine threat, they spend far more of the percentage GDP on NATO than it's even the UK. So it depends on your perception. And if you kind of look at a map, the further away you are from Russia, the less the country is likely to put into of its GDP into arming and supporting NATO. So Trump wasn't the first president to do that, and to be fair, I think they've got a point.
I mean, the thing is, yeah, I mean, every president from sort of Barack Obama was saying the thing, and before it was like, yes, yes, of course, but whilst there was this, there was, NATO was relying, or the Europeans were relying, that the Americans would always back them up. So it was always, they were all saying, yes, well, one day we will. And suddenly, obviously, Trump's come in and said, right, well, you are now. And that's, yeah, you know, that's really put the proverbial amongst the pigeons. Tim?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we've moved away from the NATO principle of post-World War II unity, with the sort of umbrella of massive industrial ability from the USA in terms of arms, into another world. And I think 13 of the NATO countries are actually reaching 3% now of their GDP in terms of providing for NATO. And it could be that there's a huge transition about to take place in Europe. In Russia, now, at this moment, 30% of their economy is devoted to defense procurement, if you like, or manufacture. They've also got something in the excess of 12% inflation. The Ukrainians are debilitating the Russians in terms of bombing their refineries very successfully, and creating a great deal of instability in Russia itself. And don't forget that Russia is still a sort of a gathering of nations. I mean, look at the Chechens. They're Islamic. I think they're Sunni. I'm not sure whether they're Sunni or not. But anyway, I think they are. They're Muslim. And Siberia, the much neglected Siberia, has something to say. All of these kind of, these areas of Russia are unstable, largely because of this ridiculous advance that Putin tried.
Yeah, but
to make.
I mean, Chechnya and Grozny. I mean, Trump was Putin was having his run. Yeah, sorry about that. That was a slip and a half, wasn't it? you know, Putin was having his dress rehearsal for that perhaps 20 years ago with what was happening, the atrocities in Chechnya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's part of the historical problem, that Europe wasn't contributing as much. The Americans saw Russia as a much more threat than, say, some of the big European nations like Germany thought. This is a new era of Russia now, and yeah, they have local problems, but that's far away from us, and we don't really need to worry about defence from Russia anymore. Well, those days have gone now. That's it.
9527 84000. To the WhatsApps we go. The US is showing that they can't be trusted with Trumpy's comments about he'd doubt if anyone would come to the US aid. Interestingly, the UK is recommissioning a mothballed stainless steelworks used in the arms industry. This one, are we going to have a tariff war? Trump is putting the FFS in tariffs. Very good indeed. Yeah, very good indeed. 13.4% inflation in Ukraine, 9.9% in Russia. You know, I mean, I hate to say it, but all this talk about rearming and you know, because, you know, in Europe, I mean, we've been here before, and it's one way of getting out of a recession is to sort of go into a rearmaments program. The problem is that, obviously, as Andres was saying last week, if you're a European nation and you are going to start committing more of your budget, it has to come from somewhere. And a lot of people, we saw this is the possibility of the Labour Party. I think there's 80 possible MPs who will say, we don't want to spend more on defence if it's going to cut, you know, health and whatever. And this, and Andres was saying the same in Spain, saying, listen, we're a very long way from Russia. And that is perhaps an interesting, you know, he was very passionate about this. It's an interesting point of view to have.
Well, I mean, it can be said that Spain is a very long way from Russia, but the likes of Sweden and Norway and other such countries, Germany and other such countries, are not. And, you know, the pressure is on their borders to have the sort of the unpleasant, murderous Russian presence is not something that's particularly edifying. And you know, they're obviously prepared to do something about it in terms of making their presence felt. It's very difficult to imagine peacekeeping forces having any bearing on a later peace. ironically.
Well, as I always say, I mean, a peacekeeping force is only a peacekeeping force until somebody sort of throws a missile at it, and then they become soldiers. And, you know, that could be all sorts of problems with that.
Well, there were problems with that in the old Yugoslavia when it broke up, wasn't it? The Swedish forces got involved and the British forces. And you're peacekeeping, but you're seeing, genocide right in front of your face. Are you allowed to intervene or are you not allowed to intervene? What exactly is a peacekeeping force anyway? They're only observational. I'm jumping back to when Putin did his special military exercise. Mm-hmm. The number of people I spoke to said, yeah, he wouldn't do anything, he's just showing off. I mean, that was the perception at the time. And like, oh, he's done it. Yeah. Yeah. Like, okay, so we're now in the new world era. And now we've got Trump coming in into the mix as well. This is really hurting my head trying to work out what's going to happen and who's going to do what.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we were saying what's the second term of Trump going to be like, and I don't think many of us thought that it would go this way.
Yeah, and so fast.
Yeah,
and now you've got John Carney just been elected as leader of Canada.
Mark Carney.
Yeah. Who's John Carney? Mark Carney.
Mark didn't say it was Jim Carrey, which would be more fun.
Mark Carney, it was hardly sweet diplomacy, his pronouncements about Trump, etc., and his joke about ice hockey will beat you at this, etc. So he's not taking any prisoners and being kowtowing to Trump, so that's going to be an interesting head-to-head one day, cara a cara.
Indeed, I mean, this means that the thing is, Trump by saying this, and also the comments he made about Canada, and also the comments he made about Mexico, have suddenly revitalised, if you like, the liberal politics. We got a phone call in, the first one of the morning. So I go, morning caller, what's your name, where you're calling from, what's your viewpoint, please?
Giles, good morning to you. This is Andreas.
Good morning, Andreas. How are you, my friend?
Hi, good morning. I hope the line is good because I'm in the car. But
the line is fine.
I was listening to the program, and you've made a reference to a comment that I made last week, which you're absolutely correct. But my point was that I don't necessarily against defense expenditure. The problem that I find is that how much defense expenditure is needed in Europe to secure peace. My fear was that we could be spending an awful lot of money. They were talking 800,000 million or whatever the figure was. Will that be enough to secure peace? And how much that is going to affect our welfare state, not here, not only in Spain, but everywhere. That is my fear, that we're going to be spending good money that is not going to be a deterrent to anyone, seeing that other countries have got unlimited resources to arm themselves, especially Russia, which is run by a dictator who, as I said, has got unlimited natural resources to pump money into military expenditure. We don't have those resources, and all that effort of the taxpayer to be spending money on securing Europe and have a peaceful future might not be enough, and then we'll be suffering for a long time paying that money back while our public services suffer a lot. I know there is a position that could be deemed as very lefty, but I'm strongly of the opinion that before we spend the money, we have to be very clear that that is going to have an effect in our security in Europe. So that was my point.
Do you think this is a time that perhaps Europe should be saying, okay, well, it is an intent. So, I mean, I don't think there's a sliding scale saying if we spend this much, it will deter Russia. But if, you know, my fear is it's divide and rule, which we've seen before. And we, you know, if Europe doesn't say, okay, we are going to do this, everybody is going to get these systems, and that will put off any thoughts that there might be of expansion from, I mean, you brought in Morocco the other day, which really sort of put the watches up everybody.
Exactly. I mean, the point of Morocco was about NATO. NATO's role has changed dramatically since it was formed after Second World War. So now we've got a situation where different countries have got different interests in different, you know, in the geopolitical world. And you've got situations like the United States having strategic allies around the world, one being Morocco. And in Morocco, we have, you know, the situation with Ceuta and Melilla in northern Africa. Now, if there was a conflict, I'm not saying there is going to be, but if there was one, what would be the position of the United States within NATO and the United States with a strategic ally? And so being part of NATO is not that big security that we had in the past. It's a little bit up in the air. And you know, the United States, rightly so, are saying we are the biggest contributors in terms of cash towards NATO. What we have to, you know, sort of ask ourselves, is it worth still being in NATO, having to put all that money there, but it still doesn't give us that 100% security that we had in the past with NATO. So are we throwing good money after bad to sustain something that is not quite relevant in this day and age?
Throwing good money after bad, panel.
Well, I would turn Andreas's question around the other way. If we don't spend the money, what effect will that have? Well, I think that might encourage Putin to think again about Baltic states next. Let's go for it. I'm just an example.
Yeah, but how much do we have to spend to be a deterrent to Putin? So that's my question. This could be an endless pot of money because he's got more and more resources he can throw in than we have. Mm. And we have a very good lifestyle here with very good social services, and good health systems all around Europe that we want to maintain. And if we spend all that money on defense, something is going to have to give.
Oh, yeah,
are we prepared to give up on our lifestyle to defend ourselves from Putin? I know your point. If we don't do it, then Putin might turn around and say, OK, well, I'm going to take the Baltic states and Poland and everything else. But does he want that? It's a very difficult situation that we are in at the moment, because which way do we go? Do we go, let's put all the money into defense, and let's give up on our welfare state, or let's not do that and risk that Putin might grow into a bigger threat. As I said today, I don't have the final answer. And again, I'm not against the expenditure of the money. If that's going to be useful, then it's going to secure us peace. But I'm afraid that we could be throwing a lot of money and be no one in the world of military presence. We'll have the United States always going to be bigger than us. Russia is going to be bigger than us. China certainly will. And we're going to be suffering trying to get an army and a system that secures peace.
Thank you. Thank you for the call there. I think he wants to come back on a point there.
Yeah, I think nice to hear your voice, Andreas. And the war footing that Russia and Ukraine are on necessitates them spending something in the region of 30-40% of their GDP on their war efforts. In NATO terms of old, and as will apply here, I believe there is a ceiling on what sort of amount of money is going to be spent in these scenarios, and it probably is around about 4%. Currently, the NATO expectation is 3%, but maybe let's say 4%, which should, with proper management, have you know, very little effect, if any, on the services that you mentioned. But you know, that would, the reason being that we would not be putting any other European nation on a war footing, strictly speaking. It would just simply be that the equipment, and for that matter, the threat is there of the Putin can't advance simply as far as he likes unopposed.
Jerry.
Yeah, the cruel reality is that a liberal democracy will always struggle against Russian democracy, where the priority is for one for military and less for welfare, whereas liberal democracies really want to look after the people. I don't think Putin cares as much about his social services and healthcare as democracies in the West, and he's willing to sacrifice. And how are we going to cope with that?
Andreas, are you still there? Or are you gone now?
Yeah, I'm still here. Thank you very much for allowing me to intervene there.
That's quite all right. Good to hear from you anyway. Take care and safe driving, my friend.
Okay, thank you, Giles. All the best for you guys.
Bye, Andreas.
952-78-4000. Take a quick break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively, joined this morning by Timothy Stafford and Dr. Jerry Hagan. The poll of polls at the moment on the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. We are asking, do you think a peace deal can be done between Russia and Ukraine? At the moment, 57% say yes, 42% say no, and 1% don't know. And I was so carried away this morning, I forgot to put the no. So if you see don't, it actually means don't know, if you're seeing on the poll of polls on Talk Radio Europe Official. Right then, Canada beat the USA in ice hockey very frequently. This after Mark Carney was saying we're not booing the whole American people, just one person. To meet even 3%, the UK would need $23.6 billion. Spain would need $28.5 billion. For all NATO members to reach 5% collectively, if they're short, £1.2 trillion. Ouch. But you can argue that the thing is, panel, that it is, and I will go on this until, you know, my next bunch of happy pills kick in, but it is, what people trying to do is to divide and rule, to sow discontent between a union. And this is what's happening at the moment. And the one thing, it doesn't matter if they can't make up the 3% or whatever needed, but to say, right, we're putting a missile system here. How on earth they would make an EU army work, but some sort of force. But it's to say, we stand united with Ukraine. And that's pretty much what the EU has kind of done, in the past, since all the sort of tomfoolery in the Oval Office. You know, Zelensky went straight to the UK, met with King Charles, had his photo up, but must have driven Trump up the wall, because, of course, only that week he'd been received an official, unprecedented second state visit to the UK. How's that going to go down as well? And then he was getting support from all the EU leaders before flying on to Saudi Arabia. I mean, it's been quite a whirlwind tour, panel.
You could look at this in a sort of old historical, or from an old historical perspective, that it's a good versus evil issue here, where as far as most of the Western world is concerned, Putin's advance and also some of the, and there have been proven atrocities in the Russian advance and the use of chemical warfare. In fact, the Ukrainians assassinated yesterday the Russian head of this kind of warfare. And there's been scientific proof that these types of weapons have been used by the Russians. I mean, we can interpret things as we wish, but the good versus evil, the Hitlerian sort of the ghastly horrors of that, and the ways in which the Russians behave compared with, let us say, the Ukrainians who are fighting for their sovereign nation, which we all understand because we all have our nations within Europe or in slightly outside it in the case of the UK, that these are vital principled things which conveniently the Americans, or certainly Donald Trump, seems to have forgotten. And the USA will find itself very isolated, as it is beginning to at the moment, but also he's being attritional himself. This ridiculous notion of making the the 51st state of Canada, his Greenland issue, the Panama Canal, all of those things that he's sort of advancing out towards is not dissimilar to what Putin is doing, albeit without so much attrition. So the world is slightly altered by a sort of tub-thumping Trump. And also, in foreign policy terms, an ignorant Trump. In Europe, we will have to look after ourselves and defend ourselves against what Putin is doing. A malign influence at best, and a very sinister one, which could lead to a total world disaster, if not prevented.
I mean, we have to be careful not to become too European in our viewpoint on all this, because if you're Trump, Europe is there, that's important, but for possibly more important for him is Asia and the Pacific and China, etc. The threats there are real and big to him, whereas we hardly think about that at all. I mean, maybe our cousins in Australia might think that's not true, but by and large, we're not really worried about fighting over certain islands, Japanese claimer there and Chinese claimer there, etc., etc. And so Trump is much more aware of all that than we tend to be here in Europe. So he got a priority. But going back to your point, Tim, about good versus evil, yeah, but the problem with that is if you look at history books, or at least the way they're written, the good tend to be the ones who won. That's who we talk about. And like good and evil is a perception now, but in 100 years' time, the historians will say, this is how that clever guy got, that's how we built the British Commonwealth, the Spanish took over South America, however. Yeah, you could extrapolate this on forever.
I mean, war is a horrible, dirty, nasty business. And I get what you're saying about there's a sovereign country defending itself, obviously, but it's, as we know, war is horrendous. There'll be good and bad on both sides. I get the point you're saying about the Second World War is a justifiable war because of the perverse nature of what was going on. There is a perverse nature with. I was speaking to the Human Rights Watch director the other day, and he was saying, the children being taken across from Ukraine into other parts of Russia. But the interesting thing, I think, is, we've talked about spheres of influence and how Trump looks at areas, so he believes that, China is, there's three great spheres. China's got Asia. Russia has, obviously, that, central Europe and perhaps influence over Europe itself. With the way he's going at the moment, he's not going to have that much influence apart from North America, and that will obviously, if he had the influence over Europe, which a commitment to NATO would give him, and an engagement, because he might find himself getting sidelined from what he thinks are the three big players, which is himself, Putin, and the Chinese leadership.
Mm. Yeah, and secretly, some European leaders, for example, might be thinking, well, let's just play this out until the end of his term and look at the long-term view over the next 10, 20, 30 years. Trump's only going to be there for a few years, and a new guy will come in and you'll see what damages Trump has done to the world, to the USA itself, and we'll wait and see, and then we'll all come back to being great buddies all over again. I mean, that's a lazy way of thinking, but it might be actually what is happening.
I don't know whether anybody's paid any particular attention to this more general point that if you really look at it, it seems to me all about energy, and the sort of isolationism that Trump is advocating for the USA, he's saying that at the same time as trying to engineer energy self-dependency for the USA. The Ukraine issues really started around energy, and there's the whole world is seen to be driven by the Middle Eastern issues. The whole world seems to be altered by the thirst for energy, and with very little self-sufficiency, or we're always dependent on somebody to provide. Mm. And Trump's tariff war situation, and this very strange, I think, seeming support of Russia in denying intelligence, and also in the slight alleviation, possibly, of sanctions, is disturbing. These are sort of the pawns that are moved in the energy pawns that are moved in the world of democracy these days, or geopolitics, and it's hard to escape from that fact. What happens to the UK as far as sanctions goes, as far as energy is concerned? Are the Norwegians stepping up? I don't know.
My problem with Trump is the most dangerous thing about him is he believes the truth is whatever he wants it to be. So he suddenly believes that Putin's a good guy, Zelensky's a crook, and maybe not him, but it might be said by Vance or Elon Musk or whatever. But I mean, look, his whole approach to everything from, for example, climate change isn't happening, drill, baby, drill. And this is just made up by scientists, and they just make this up. Scientists are being hugely prosecuted in the US at the moment by Trump and his administration. They're scared to speak. They're losing their jobs. The whole world of science and medicine is being devastated by inability to speak out. If you speak out, I mean, Vance has a cheek. I said this a few weeks ago. He had a cheek talking about freedom of speech in Europe when the US scientific community are all completely suppressed, can't see anything. Trump is making things, whatever he wants it to be, that's the truth, and that's the way we do it. And some of the things he comes up with are just so against reality, it's just frightening that he actually persists in doing that, and he's a leader of one of the greatest nations on the earth. Unbelievable.
9567 84000. Going to take a quick break and then back for the last 10 minutes of the first half of Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Yes, indeed, with you until 12 o'clock today. And Viewpoint brought to you, as I said before, by St. James Global Private Clients, who have announced their expansion into Spain for expert financial advice for Spanish tax residents. And to maximise your retirement income, contact St. James Global Private Clients at info@stjamesglobal.com, protecting your assets and growing your wealth. Right then, if you want to get involved with this conversation, anything else that is crossing your viewpoint, we've only got 8 minutes of the first half, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And then to the WhatsApps we go. We need a little less consumerism. We no need to change cars every 6 months or have a phone every year. It's about the vital minerals or whatever. Trump just loves the dictator, and Putin can pay Donnie like a puppet on a string with a compromat he has on him. This one in. I wonder if Putin's objective is actually to neutralize the governments of these countries bordering Russia. Hungary, Slovakia, Georgia, Romania, Ukraine? Hungary tick, Slovakia tick, Georgia tick. Next, the Baltic states, Czech Republic and Poland. It might be accompanied by just by cyber warfare and creating unrest in the West. He's already weakened the EU, plus splitting off the UK. A dictator doesn't have the same constraints as a democracy. Meanwhile, hi there again. Trump is following Project 2025, which was the thing that people were worried about before. Also, he speaks like something or other, like the comment about Saudi investing several trillion in the US. To the lines we go. Morning, Corley, alive on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. Yourself?
Morning, Alf.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And yourself?
Good, good.
Good to hear from you.
I'm cold and wet. Why is it that Britain's getting all the heat and the sun and we're suffering from all this rain?
It's not the Brexit we voted for.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not why I moved to Spain either. Anyway, good morning, Tim. Good morning, Jerry.
Morning, Alf.
Hi, Alf.
So, Andreas, Andreas always makes me smile. It's because people say, you know, stop giving money abroad, stop giving this, stop doing that, you know, keep it for our own. That's not a lefty view. You know, forget all that. You know, there is no politics involved in that. It's a bit, as I always say, if you go to the British public and say to the British public, should we bring back hanging, I will guarantee it will be an overwhelming yes. Until you explain to people what happens and why you shouldn't and all the rest of it, and you give it to people who think it through, and then you get a slightly different view, which is why we don't have, you know, capital punishment in the UK, and why they're getting rid of it around the world in Western countries. And the same thing applies to, we shouldn't be giving all this overseas aid. I mean, what America are doing is just unbelievable. What they're doing, as I said last week, Kenya, you know, 850 million dollars of aid, when there's a million people relying on that aid to survive in life. And they go, oh no, you know, we'll bring in nutty clubs with his electric cars, and I'm sure he'll resolve the problem. Yeah, we'll cut the aid, save all the money for Americans, and the world will be a much better place. Pile of nonsense. So it's not a lefty view, it's a view of normal people. You have to explain to people what giving world aid brings to the rest of the world. And there is no way, all that, well, we gave it to the Commonwealth. We didn't give anything to the Commonwealth. We went and nicked all their, whatever assets they had, whatever minerals they had, whatever they had in the world. You know, that's what the British Commonwealth was. We took it all, and the rich people, not the UK, the rich people made fortunes out of it, including people like Winston Churchill. You know, wonderful man in the war, but for the rest of his life, questionable.
Yeah.
And with Tim, I agree with Tim. It is all about energy, because unfortunately, energy is technically replacing gold. You know, everybody used to trade gold and thought, you know, you can't grow crops with gold, but you can, or you can't grow crops if you don't have enough energy to do all the stuff that goes with it. So I think it is a worldwide issue about how are we all going to survive with our little bits of energy that we've got to provide ourselves. And Andreas was right to one extent. What does Spain do? Does Spain put money into NATO, or do they put money into wind farms? And I would bet, left wing, right wing, middle wing, whatever wing it is of their politics, they're all saying we need to put money into energy, and NATO will become second. And we'll hope, fingers crossed, as Jerry says, fingers crossed, that, you know, Russia, China, whoever starts the conflict doesn't start the conflict on us. And we'll stay in our little corner of the world. What about Portugal, you know, one away from Spain? Why should they put into NATO? What do they get out of it? Well, we know, you know, the world coverage hopefully brings some sort of world peace. It doesn't bring individual peace country by country, but it does bring worldwide peace. And when Jerry was talking about his stuff, about Trump, I was listening to, they had on Sky, they had Trump's biographer, who's now not his biographer, because again, Trump has fallen out with someone. So he knew Trump for 30 years, has been writing his biography all that time. And when questioned, it was like, so who does Trump go to? Who does Trump take advice from? Who does Trump talk to, you know, before establishing? And this guy was quite blunt. He just said, Trump only takes advice from Trump. He goes to nobody to seek advice. He objects to people giving him advice. So if you, you know, you say, oh, you shouldn't do that because of, the likelihood is, you know, like a spoiled kid, isn't it? You know, don't do that. And they do it just to have a go at you. And that's what Trump is coming across as. It's called, I've got this plan. I've got this view. I am right. And we will do this. None of these ideas, by the way, the Greenland, the Canada, recovering some of the world benefits, none of those are Trump's ideas. They all go back, you know, 20, 30, 40 years in American history with previous presidents saying things like, you know, we should have some sort of arrangement with Canada. We want to take Greenland. We want to have Greenland as part of the United States in whatever guise, form or whatever. You've also got, remember, the Greenland people saying that they want to have independence from Denmark.
Well, yeah, so there's an election today, or Thursday, I think it is, for, you know, up in Nuuk, which is the capital of Greenland.
Yep.
There you go.
And part of that election process is we want independence from Denmark. So there's a lot of things going on. And interviewing the Danish people, as they were, and unfortunately for others, I do watch, you know, normal media, Sky, BBC and stuff
so,
like
so
that.
You're going to speak Danish then for a minute, Alf, you're about to amaze me. Listen, we're going to go to the, we're running out of time with the first half of the show. So thanks for your call in. Wide range of subjects there, Alf.
Yeah.
Right then. Going out, thanks very much. Going to the national, international news, and then back for the second half of Viewpoint. See you after the national and international news.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Welcome back to the second half of Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. Always live, always lively. Brought to you, and thank you because it's brought to you by St. James Global Private Clients. With over 40 years experience helping clients enjoy their retirement and lifestyle for expert financial advice. For Spanish tax residents and to maximise your retirement income. Contact St. James Global Clients at info@stjamesglobal.com. St. James Global, protecting your assets and growing your wealth. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. Joined in the studio by Tim Stafford and Dr. Jerry Hagen, looking at some bits and pieces. By the way, if you want to know what's coming up, following me will be Stephen Ritson, as always. Following Stephen with Europe Today, Stephen is Selena with the Lifestyle Show. Then it's Anna standing in for Hannah today before with TR in the afternoon before Spain today with Howard Brereton and his brand spanking new computer, which he let us know about at 8:30 on Sunday morning. The group chat morning call, you're live on TRE, what's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yes, good morning, Giles. It's Gary.
Morning, Gary. How the devil are you, sir?
How are you? Rather moist, should we say. It's okay to say that.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
I'm a great believer, and whenever you get a confrontation or an argument, etc., blah, 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 why is the other party on the other side? Why are they carrying out the actions they're carrying out? Or why are they saying what are they saying? I'm not an apologist for what the Russians have done, but can people please understand why they've been forced into this position? It doesn't condone going into a sovereign state, but people need, and I bang on about it all the time, people need to do their research and look back in history why these people have done it. Now, it's been said on here, I'm not going to go over old ground about we promised the Russians that we wouldn't go an inch east after the fall of the Berlin Wall. That's all been said, etc. But what I am getting fed up with is people commenting. They're not commenting. When the Russians and the Chinese do something, it's ignored. But when the likes of Trump is talking about, and most of his stuff, rhetoric, he's not going to do it. He shouldn't do it. He can't do it. And even his own people won't allow him to do it. But with regards to the someone mentioned the Panama Canal. No one's commented on the influence that China's had on the Panama Canal. Now, you can't allow that. The Americans cannot allow that. This has nothing to do with Trump. America cannot allow that. We're going back, and again, this is going over old ground. We're going back. We're in a situation where it's Orwell's 1984. And you've commented earlier on about the four spheres of influence, the Russian, Chinese, American, and the fourth one, which is an area of conflict. So what I think, and dig out, people, you want to have a go at me, I think Trump is playing a very, very clever game. I'm just waiting for the counterblast when Trump turns round and makes the Russians pay. For, if they don't hold to a ceasefire, then the West, Russia, America in this case is in the driving seat. They've got to make the Russians pay. In what way, I don't know, whether sanctions can be upped, etc. But he's got talks now. He's got ceasefire talks going. So I can't see what he's doing wrong, to be quite honest.
Gary, as always, good to hear from you. Putting some points well across there, some forceful points well made, my friend.
Can I just add to that?
With trembling voice, I said yes, you can. But here we go.
I don't know what you tremble. Why you tremble for? I can't understand it.
It's the pills, dear boy.
Trump is drawing in Ukraine by the back door into NATO by these minerals. If he puts American assets in there, then the Russians ain't going to touch it. The Russians daren't touch it because the Americans will have assets in there. It's a bit like if you switch it round, it's a bit like Syria. It's that the Americans, when Obama dropped the ball for not going in and crossing the so-called, you know, when the Syrians crossed the red line with the chemical weapons, when he didn't deal with that, then that gave carte blanche to, you could say, the Russians and, dare I say, the Chinese and Taiwan going in there. But the Americans didn't go into Syria as hard as they wanted to, and that was shown by the Russian fighters taking off from their bases in Syria and coming up against the Americans in the air. So they basically told the Americans to back off. Now, I can see, and hopefully, I may be wrong on this, this is just me throwing some things out there, but I can see the Americans, not Trump, the Americans doing the same with the Russians once they go in and get these so-called minerals in Ukraine. But that's the way I'm playing, because I've got children and I'm scared to death for them and their grandchildren. But this is a lot more dangerous than what people think it is. But look at the legitimate, whether it's legitimate or not, claims from the Russians, how this all started and how the West, lack of leadership, have allowed this to go on. There you go.
Thank you very much indeed. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. studio@tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. And you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 9967 95. To the poll of polls we go. To see what we're asking on Talk Radio Europe Official. We're asking, do you think a peace deal can be done between Russia and Ukraine? 60%. Say yes, 39% say no, and 1% don't know if it can be or not. Just a quick few more minutes on this before we move on to some other stuff as well. Here we go. Americans are trying to understand to what extent Ukraine is ready for peaceful negotiations. The Taiwanese are in Syria. Who knew? Right. Meanwhile, Paul said, here we go, here's something different.
To get away from all this, the panel are looking. I mean, do you want to come back on anything that Gary mentioned there, panel?
No, you're
done there, are you? Yeah, I think we're kind of done. I think we've done an hour. I think Gary has rounded it up, you know, and put the full stop and then the exclamation mark and the. Do you remember Victor Borg of phonetic punctuation? Do you remember Victor Borg? You know, do you remember Victor Borg? No?
Pianist?
Yes. And he used to do the sketch about phonetic punctuation.
Yes.
Anyway, I won't do it. I'll play the sketch.
It's a comedy one. Yeah.
It's a comedy one. Anyway, so we'll move on from that. If there's something that's crossing your viewpoint, here are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Indeed, no, we didn't. Right then. Oh, so here we go. Here's one we go. The rain. Thank you. Thank you for this one from Paul. With Spanish people waking up to relentless wet days, they're feeling a little strange with their emerging Britishness. Excuse me. The urge to have bacon and egg for breakfast, tea instead of coffee. Well, it's becoming normal foot attire for children in Spain. Slippy pavements. This is true. Banks open after 2 p.m. Okay. Cars stopping at zebra crossings. I wonder if they can see them. Endless conversations about the weather with la-di-da posh English accents and an overwhelming desire to plunder remote countries and open up museums with stolen goods. Thank you very much for that, Paul. Paul, any thought, I mean, apart from the obviously remote, that's quite witty actually, but, slippy pavements. Do you think, I mean, let's get off the serious stuff for a bit. We've got 45 minutes. Let me know, because otherwise Stephen will have nothing to talk about. The rain in Spain falls mainly upon the Spanish, obviously, and it has been. You remember a couple of weeks ago we were saying we need rain because there's drought, and now we've got rain, so therefore... So,
talk about disasters waiting to happen. If you put a pedestrian crossing... Right in the junction...
Yes.
So that, you know, I suppose it's technically for the pedestrian who's wandering along the pavement, but, you know, right there, in slippery conditions when, you know, perhaps the Spanish are less used to...
If you don't light and put beacons letting people know the aforementioned thing is there,
yes.
And, you know...
Oh, yes. So, you know, you need utter, you know, vigilance. Vigilance in the Spanish.
Yeah, here's a thing. Because people have their earphones in, and normally on the electric scooters, but the number of people who just launch themselves. Now, I know that obviously if you've read Death in the Afternoon by Hemingway, you know the Spanish fatalist view of life and the whole thing. You know, Assis a la tarde and all that. But that, I didn't think that extended to people just stepping off into, you know, where no Andaluz has been before, which is, used to be the front of my Land Cruiser before I killed it. So therefore, the white van now. What way?
Catholics do that, Matt.
Did you just say that? Go on.
They do, because they have a great deal of faith.
So did George Michael, but that's not the point, is it, really? Jerry, come up with something relatively sensitive.
Well, there is a point to what Tim's saying. In the old days, in research, we did market research around different countries about people who got lung disease from smoking. And there was a kind of, in the American English world, well, that's their own fault. But in the Spanish world, it was, it's just as bad luck. You know, it's a good thing type of thing. You know, right? Like, they don't blame people for getting smoking disease, whereas the kind of Anglo-Saxon view is, it's your fault, you shouldn't have done it. You know? The biggest one, I worked in Saudi Arabia once for a while, for a few weeks, but they had unbelievable faith in Allah. They would overtake round mountain bends and et cetera, et cetera. And like in the town square, the police would put up photographs of crashes with the bodies still in them saying, drive more carefully, but Allah's looking after me, you know? And like, so you different levels of faith will alter the way you live as a human being.
Well, that's the
which
thing.
Is quite remarkable.
Well, I mean, when you come around, sometimes I sort of think that the reeds that you find, especially in South America, when you come around a corner and there's little crosses, and that should be a warning sign. So if you come around a corner and there's like 105 small crosses, you know that you basically had it. your time is up.
Good chance.
Exactly. Now then, this came in from Cookie, and I didn't get this because I thought she'd written people on the CDs are made of sugar, but what she meant is the cost del Sol, but you see, I'm of that generation.
Yeah,
they think they're going to dissolve in the rain. Thank you. Meanwhile, pedestrians need to wait until the car stops, not just walk into the road. I won't even get you started on hoodie wearing electric scooter drivers of a teen nature with their earbuds in. And well, here in Iznahar, our river is now Cafe con Leche. I believe that means probably the, it doesn't really, it's not like a child chocolate factory for caffeine heads. Yeah. Otherwise, I would be heading up. Very nice part. Have you been to Iznahar? Iznahar?
Yes, I believe I have. Yes, very nice indeed.
952784000 is the phone number. A quick break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively, joined by Dr. Jerry Hagan and Timothy Stafford. If you want to get involved with that, get your viewpoint across. These are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on plus 34 645 99 6795. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Sorry, you can discuss jet fuel and sodium, because of all the things, you know, that's like a comment. This is the collision that happened yesterday. They said on the news that a crash between, isn't there's never a crash. It's always collision at sea, isn't it?
Well, it wasn't even a collision. One of them wasn't moving.
Right. Okay. I've seen the pictures.
It was in fog, but they've got huge electronic systems. You should be able to see a mile away. I mean, it was a tanker, not a small yacht dinghy, yes, or something like that. And it's standing there, or standing, floating there, anchored.
Anchored.
When it drives into it, and the one that drove in is full of sodium cyanide, which is instantly toxic. I mean, it's used when entomologists collect. Put an insect in a jar, they've got sodium cyanide because it kills the insect immediately. In the 1980s, they used to fish with sodium cyanide. They put it in the water, killed all the fish, and then get them out. But that was banned. So when they talk about the threat to the wildlife around there, it's very real. If that sodium cyanide gets in the water, it'll kill everything immediately.
And that's bad enough. But jet fuel...
Jet fuel,
just to add spice. Just to add spice. Well, to the
that'll
thing.
Float and burn, so it's not quite so hazardous. Apart from if you're in the fire itself.
Exactly.
Well, funny enough, my eldest son works for a company. They're paid for by the oil companies. They fly around all over the place solving spillage issues and so on. And but in their case, it's oil, and because oil floats and. And they find out ways, even with ice involved, how to disperse oil that is under ice and so on. But as Dr. Jerry has just told us, that you know, this sort of highly, I use the word dispersible, but I don't know whether that's the right thing to say. Mm-hmm. But if sodium cyanide is sort of in the water in large quantity and killing everything inside, there's not much you can do to mop it up, is there? I wouldn't imagine.
What do you call the stuff you bleach your teeth with? That kills it.
Fluoride?
No, bleach blonde. No, the stuff you...
Peroxide.
Peroxide, yeah, that kills it. But do you know what? They make sodium cyanide. I had to look it up.
Go on, how do they make sodium cyanide then, Dr. Jerry?
For gold mining.
That's all you needed to know about. What's it called again?
Collisions at sea.
Okay, fair enough. Moving on now. The dad of a British backpacker who has been detained in the US for 14 days over a mistake in her visa says she's been forced to live off cold Reich and mushy beans. 28-year-old Rebecca Burke from Monmouthshire set off on a road trip around North America, but when she tried to cross from Canada into Washington State, she was refused entry. Her dad, Paul Burke, claims she was taken away in handcuffs and is wearing a prison jumpsuit. It's a bit strong, isn't it? For them, you know, you wanted to have a... Do you have a thought about this,
Joe? Yeah, I've crossed American borders from Mexico, and they are really, really strict. We were in a conference once in San Diego, so you can get a little tram across the border. So some of us went off shopping in a free afternoon, and one of the young guys didn't know he had to bring his passport. It took him about 5 days to go back across the border. They held him in prison, like even though his passport was in his hotel room and his visa, etc. I don't know why she's been there for 2 weeks when the Home Office is a foreign office are getting involved, etc. And apparently last night, one of the guys in ICE, whatever it's called, came to see the girl and said, like, you're now high profile, so put you on the top of the list, but that'll be still at least another 10 days before you get out. So I don't know why it takes so long. Is this because of Trump's new rules and they've always been like that, but yeah. Why spend all that money keeping somebody in prison for a month?
Because...
Like, when it's just a stupid little girl.
The thing is with this, is that once you are in the cogs, once you're in the cogs of the legal system, my learned friend will agree with me on this one, there's very little you can do about it. And so even if, you know, they want to try and get her out, you don't just open the door and say, off you, jolly well trot, Miss Burke by name, etc. And also, yeah, I mean, I used to speak to, a couple of years ago with the British ambassador, but with the British consul in Malaga as well, Steve, and they used to have to say to people, we are not a get out of jail card. So you can be, you know, you might say the Foreign Office is getting involved, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's very little you can do for somebody who's trying to get to the States, you know, with a pumped up bunch of, you know, security of border patrol people or whatever, customs official, but border officials. I mean, they're not going to say, okay, we'll turn back around that way, especially in the current climate. They'll just say, well,
you shouldn't be here.
You shouldn't be here.
Yeah. What are you doing here? And of course, the due process. I mean, you know, one can't sort of suddenly, create a pass when various legal entities have to be assembled. And I don't know the details of it, but I would suggest that its due process is delaying this unfortunate girl,
yeah,
who probably had advice as to what was required and may have thought that she would have carte blanche and off she'd go. But there's a salutary lesson in it, but it's very unfortunate for her.
I suppose the thing is, you know, they think, okay, I've got a visa for Canada, that will apply for all America. It's a bit, I mean, who's she getting any advice off? I'm not actually sure of that one, but I would be very...
Not from Mark Carney, anyway.
No, indeed. It's going to be really interesting with Mark Carney to see how this all pans out, because you've got a guy who's the former Bank of England there, and that is going to make any conversations on tariffs or fiscal policy or everything else. It's going to be very interesting to see how Trump deals with that, because Trudeau, you might argue that he was a bit of a himbo. It was all looks and the whole thing. You know, Carney, although people are saying he's like George Clooney, trust me, I had a fellow journalist, female, thought he was the hottest thing since, I don't know, baked beans on the proverbial. So, but Carney is obviously, he saw the Bank of England through the run-up and through what we refer to here as El Brexit. So he's, you know, he is an interesting one, and he's going to be a very, I mean, obviously a very intelligent guy. He's going to speak the same language as the European fiscal leaders as well. This could be a very interesting period for US-Canadian relations.
Yeah. Yes. Right. I was alluding to that earlier on. Like there's two completely different personalities, yeah. And he started with, jumped on the ground with feet running by, came straight in by a joke about, we beat you at ice hockey, we'll beat you at this. There was no subtle diplomatic, maybe he's playing to his home base, but you still have to take into account Trump will be listening.
Yes, and he probably takes a longer view as well, Carney, and than the very short-termist Trump. And is sort of less reactionary. I mean, the one thing that marks Trump, I think, from this early stage of this second phase, is that he's shown himself to be someone who can fall out with people, including Putin. He could fall out with Putin just as he's fallen in very quickly. That seems to be the mark of the man, that if things don't go quite his way, he will fall out and fail to deliver. I think the Canadians got to stand tough. I really do, and I think they've got a reasonable person to do that job.
952-788-4000. On the WhatsApps, Giles, I'm listening to your caller. How can anybody call Trump a clever guy? He's a wannabe gangster, he's a convicted criminal, a liar. You cannot trust him as far as you can throw him. I am worried for the future. Thank you very much, Claudia Inerka. Just to let you know as well, 90.3 FM is in off air in the Costa Blanca Benidorm area. Techs are advised on the move to identify the problem and fix it as soon as possible. Carney has a chance to be, because he's next Prime Minister of Canada after the election. Quick break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Yes, indeed. Now then, there's no sign of an end to the rift between two senior Reform UK figures. Nigel Farage and the party's suspended MP have stepped up criticism of each other. Rupert Lowe, denies bullying, denies bullying female staff and threatening the chairman with violence. However, Reform's deputy leader Richard Tice says his boss Farage was right to take action. You had a thought about this, Jerry, about Reform, which used to be the Brexit party, so we, wherever, you know.
Yeah,
you're sighing there, Jerry.
Well, it comes across. I don't know what they want their image to look like, but they don't sound like a bunch of smooth, intellectual, thoughtful people. They're coming across as a ragtag of populists who just keep fighting each other, and they're getting a protest vote at the moment. It's making the head swell, and they're all mad.
Well, I mean, other views are available, obviously. But I mean, Lowe said the party in an interview with the Daily Mail, because hey, the party was quote unquote a protest party led by the Messiah. So, you know, and to which the reply is obviously he's not the Messiah, he's a very naughty boy, etc. Yes, indeed. Farage yet he would need the right people around him to deliver the goods as party leader. Farage hit back an interview saying that Lowe was completely wrong. And Reform UK was absolutely not a protest party. A spokesperson from Reform said they'd withdrawn the whip. So that means from 5 to 4 they've now got.
Lost 20% of your representation in Parliament. The Tories lost the last election by constantly fighting amongst themselves, etc., and making themselves look like a useless bunch. So that gave rise to the Reform Party, who are turning out to be an even more useless bunch, as far as I can see.
The interesting thing is, though, if you look at the way that sort of the populist parties that got Trump into office in the States, you know, we've got quite a few people like Robert Jenrick going on about two-tier policing and Kemi Badenoch. She's been very quiet over the last couple of weeks, actually, as Badenoch. And this sort of identity-led politics has suddenly taken a back seat because of the seriousness about what's been going on. Because, you know, this is a time for grown-ups in the room. And so to have sort of, you know, generic going on about, you know, this was the thing about, it was white Christian males who were going to be threatened by this new look at diversity. And I just thought that is straight out of the MAGA playbook.
Yeah. I think
white straight Christian males. Let's get this.
Don't forget old, because I have to be included in the. I mean, if you're going to go deep.
Well, I mean, if we look for white straight Christian mature males, you are, Stafford, in the book.
I am
grinning.
I think if you're looking at, let's say, a Republican notion of a sort of a reset or kind of a renaissance of their own nation, it could be argued that, you know, certainly in the case of the UK, not so much with most European countries, we really do need something very hard to happen, because it's drifting into, laws are being changed to accommodate a sort of level of tolerance, which is unacceptable. I mean, the law change, I mean, that because it impinges on free speech. So there's that, and there's the actuality of things. I mean, people, if they were polled, and thank God they won't be, as a whole populace, because you know where that leads.
Boaty McBoatface, basically.
Boaty McBoat, and all of that. They would wish for border controls, such as the US have just instigated. They would wish for a more, I would say, radical defence of the British culture than they're having at the moment. I mean, that sounds very right, and I don't mean to sound that way, but that the kind of thinking that has got us into this terrible, confused, badly led mess has to be addressed in the case of the UK. For some curious reason, let us say Spain as another example, predominantly of socialist and thinking, doesn't seem to have these sort of major invasional and other issues because it maintains a very tranquillo attitude.
Apart from obviously the sort of thousands a day coming over, you know, the Canary Islands, and that's why at the moment.
I don't want to mention those.
And, you know, yes. I was going to say something. But here's the thing, my learned friend. Yes. Because as somebody who has, you know, has a history, you know, has an understanding of the law, etc., this whole thing about I was reading, you know, I was reading briefly Jenrick's response about this white straight Christian single male, not straight male, sorry, that's me obviously. And the thing was talking about that judges would be asked to take into consideration the background of the accused or the defendants or whatever if it came to sentencing about their ethnicity, their diversity, the whole thing. This was the big the point. And I just thought to myself, well, surely that is if this is being brought in, then that is a dangerous thing, because the law should apply. The law should apply equally, no matter if you are from a back. You know, no, because then we get to the point. Well, it's like, you know, everybody's got a backstory.
But when you see the recommendations, that was only a small part of it.
Yes,
this was only a small part.
But that's the sort of thing.
I knew a guy once who's the head of the boss of a women's prison in Essex, and he said 90% of the women there had psychological problems. The other 10% were working girls for cash. And, like, it's completely different from men's prisons. I'm trying to talk on daytime radio. But 90% of the women shouldn't have been in prison at all, as far as he was concerned.
Sure.
And I think that's what these guidelines are trying to get to. That if somebody has a learning difficulties, a disability, they should have more consideration than me. For example, if I commit a crime, they're committing a crime is not necessarily the same badness or evilness or whatever it is as that. Now, ethnicity might come into a small part, but suddenly the whole kind of right-wing organ is focused on this bit about ethnicity and religion. They might also be relevant points to take. But there's an awful lot of other things. People who are vulnerable, I can't remember the list of all the things they're doing. But anyway, the other thing today I heard on is the government have this, both the Labour and the Tory governments, this meetings went on for 20 months without either government being anywhere aware of it. The civil servants were meeting, but the politicians didn't know anything about it. And this committee are completely independent. The government told them not to, and they said, go away, we are independent, it's nothing to do with you. So you'd have to change legislation in Parliament for them to interfere. Mm. So this is a much bigger story than you think it's going to be.
Right.
Yeah, I think I mean, there's a reason why the law is so precise. I mean, this is all the protections that one has in the sort of civil law, as far as you having contracts or mortgages or whatever it might be, is one thing. In criminal, it's equally precise in criminal law, because the law is laid down and can be transgressed and so on. The only reasons why someone might be given some sort of lenience, well, some sort of mitigation in a court, is if it could be proven that they are insane, in other words, suffering from a form of psychosis, or if they're unfit to stand trial, which means that perhaps they might have Alzheimer's or something of that kind, or some other debilitation, which one might not be termed to be insanity. So, you know, in those cases, otherwise, the law should apply on every square inch of your land, of your country, as it's laid down in your constitution, well, in your legal form, and it should apply to everybody equally. There is no mitigation in your religion, in your ethnicity, in your age. Even in the state, the condition of your mind, your sort of inebriation at the time of you committing the offence. So, you know, all of these things are cut and dried as far as law is concerned, until such time as the judiciary are persuaded or altered by governments to allow such things, such alterations to take place. I mean, that is one of the most despicable things that any government could do, which is alter the law to accommodate their own political ends.
Mm. But I completely understand what Tim's saying. I understand what you're saying, but I think get, I might be wrong. I think they're trying to say it's not a question of finding guilty or not guilty, it's a punishment that comes afterwards. A practical example was when I was a GP. There was a family in my practice who had a Huntington's career. Now, Huntington's career doesn't come on until in your 40s. If you've got it, exactly half of your children would get it. So a woman had it and she had children, and the boy, about 1920, was already getting in trouble with police. One of the classic signs of you're going to get Huntington's chorea is getting in trouble with the police. Now, that boy, for genetic reasons, which is a much more clear-cut than some of the things like religion or but for that boy, is if he commits a crime and I commit the same crime, I think I should deserve more punishment, or he should deserve less punishment than me, because he has mitigating circumstances. But he's neither insane nor got Alzheimer's, etc. But under the law at the moment, it's quite rigid around those points, and this committee are trying to make it a bit more accommodating for all sorts of other things, i.e. majority of women in women's prisons shouldn't be in prison at all, for example.
Yeah, I go along with that. I mean, let's say a Down syndrome sufferer perhaps did some sort of fiddling somewhere. He might not have known the consequence or the illegality of such a thing. That is the sort of thing about. And this poor, unfortunate lymphoma, Hodgkin's career, sufferer. Yes, I suppose there's a sort of, he sees the finite nature of his condition and loses a sort of ground that. And I suppose in a court that should be taken as a form of mitigation.
Well, the head of the Sentencing Council yesterday lashed out at critics at the planned changes. Lord Justice William Davis said any suggestion to guidelines for judges would be given preferential treatment to minority groups, and was completely wrong after a backlash against Labour ministers and right-wing politicians. He also warned the Justice Secretary the government would have a legal fight. The new guidelines for judges and magistrates to follow in considering whether to jail people, so they should consider the background of members of ethnic and religious minorities. Labour said it will seek to block the changes due to come into effect next month, which also argues judges and magistrates should look more closely into the background of criminals who are female, pregnant, or aged 18 to 25. So if you're a pregnant female at the age of 23... you can basically, let's not go. So the council's view is that providing a sentence with as much information as possible about the offender is one means by which such disparity might be addressed. I see the point, because they also want to keep people out of prisons, don't they? This is the thing, we don't have the prisons, which has been proved by the scenes that we saw in the UK last summer, the basic race riots that happened, or the anti-immigrant riots that happened. We don't have enough prison cells to hold people. So if somebody's falls into that category, and obviously I remember I was visiting in Holloway one time, and there was a wonderful woman there who was running the tuck shop in the meeting room, and she had come over from Jamaica, and she had been threatened by Yardies, and she got caught obviously at Heathrow, and she was doing I think 20 years, and you just think woman from Jamaica, and she shouldn't have been in for 20 years, and that's maybe the thing they should be looking at when sentencing that sort of thing.
I think, if there's someone is a danger to others, in other words, they're violent and likely to remain violent and can't control themselves and so on, or it's habitually stealing with menace and so on, these people need to be, or professional criminals that will not stop. Yes, they need to be given custodial sentences. There are many other areas where it's completely inappropriate and unsuitable, as you've just described.
Some of the things here. I mean, because one of the things I'm just going to call up the report. First custodial sentence or a risk of a custodial sentence of 2 years or less. That's the Spanish system. If you get a custodial system of 2 years or less, you don't If it's a first-time offence in Spain,
right,
and the sentence is less than 2 years, it is very rare that you actually serve a custodial sentence. And they're looking at bringing that to the UK. Yeah, suspended sentence.
Kind of sort of Damocles hanging.
Yeah, exactly.
Over
yeah, yeah. As long as you're a good boy. Yeah. It's and then it's got other thing about young adults, female from ethnic minority, pregnant or postnatal, or sole or primary carer for dependent relatives. So, or if the court considers that one or more of the following may apply to the offender, okay, has disclosed that they are transgender, and that immediately sets the Daily Mail off.
Yep.
He has or may have any addiction issues. Well, that's me sorted then. Has or may have serious chronic mental or physical disability or mental health, learning disabilities, including developmental disorders and neurodiverse conditions or brain injury damage. If the court considers the offender is or there is a risk they may have been a victim of domestic abuse, physical or sexual abuse, violent or threatening behaviour, coercive or controlling behaviour, economic, psychological, emotional or any other abuse. That's an interesting one. Modern slavery or trafficking or coercion, grooming, intimidation or exploitation. To the lines we go. No, they're just gone. Never mind. So that's quite an interesting list there. And you could pick it.
That's the Spanish one.
No, that's the British one. The Spanish is less than 2 years. Very rare you get. Very rare you get custodial.
But I think quite a lot of that thing... quite a lot of that list is very sensible, and to pick out one bit about ethnicity and something else, what was it?
Faith.
Become a headline for certain newspapers.
But if it's sole or primary carer for dependents, that's... we're not talking serious. We're not talking if you've done, you've run over a busload of nuns or something. But if you're a solo care dependent, because that has, as you will know, my learned friend, the sentence isn't just on the person; it's on the community and the family around them.
Absolutely, and all of these things. I mean, the first thing that one's going to do defending these people is well, apart from the first thing, the very first thing, which is to undermine and disparage any witnesses there might be to whatever offence it was. Is to gather as much in the way of mitigation and character reference as one possibly can, and find out whether they're coerced. There are plenty of younger people who've been persuaded by older people to perpetrate some sort of offence, and that's a tremendous defence because the scene was highly suggestible.
Hello. Good morning. Morning call. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
I'm calling from Santiago de la Ribera, up near Alicante, and two things I'd like to point out. First is, I was a member of what was called the Board of Visitors, which was effectively a oversight of prisons many years ago, and I was responsible, part with a group, to look after Hindley-Borstal between Manchester and Liverpool. At that time, and I'm talking about the 70s, to the late 70s, there were many courses offered for young boys who had committed offences and were necessarily incarcerated. And so there was lots of opportunity for them to train, to come out and be an asset to society by applying for a job or creating a business for themselves. There were lots of things. Along came a new Conservative government that closed down, then wanted all the hang 'em and flog 'em brigade, and so they were all shut down and, in my view, spoiled. However, we are where we are. And then a few years later, as a JP, I was invited to go to the borders of Scotland where a program was running for young men. This was in the normal prison. This wasn't a prison. This wasn't a young offenders institution as we now know it. This was an ordinary prison. If their sentence was for 2 years or less, they were given the opportunity to do this course of rehabilitation. And so they went up to the borders of Scotland for a fortnight, and they had to do serious brashing work in the forest in the morning. And then there was lunch, and it was a very basic. They lived in huts in the forest. It was nothing palatial in any way, shape or form. And in the afternoon, there would be an adventurous activity, much of which was to frighten them to death. And in turn, it frightened me, I have to say. And then in the evening, there was a time to sit down and talk about your offending, look at why, how, what had you done right or wrong, how had other people reacted, and so on, and share thoughts and so on. At that time, there were two young men from Liverpool. And after lunch on this particular day, they invited me to go along to a stream where they could tickle trout. And so I'd never done this. So, yeah, I'll go with you. So I went along and we laid on the bank, and sure enough, into the pool came a beautiful trout, which one of the boys tickled its belly, lifted it out and said, "There we are, sir. Look at that. Isn't that beautiful?" I said, "It's absolutely magnificent. May I try?" "Of course you can." So another one came along and I did the same. I'd never done it before. I was absolutely enthralled. It was magical. And of course, I put it back, as quite rightly so. And in the discussion later on, returning to the shed, the huts where they were staying, I said, "So tell me, boys, do you think this will have benefited you? And how will you use it when you go back?" And the response I got was, "You don't get many trout in Liverpool, do you?" "When we go back, everybody will be the same. They'll be on our backs to do just the same as we did before. There'll be no change." Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Thank you for your time. But it's an interesting point, isn't it, about if you take people out, and because a lot of people won't have had that experience of being in the countryside, especially if you come from an urban background, and you give people the chance to do that. There's a possibility, perhaps a rare sliver of hope there. 9527 84000. We're into the last 4 minutes of this morning's viewpoint. Just to let you know how the poll of polls is going, because I know you're on. And Gary says, "Why does people vote don't know? Why can they?" Well, just because we're a varied bunch here on TRE. So the poll of polls, excuse me. So you never know where you're going to go. We've done everything from Ukraine to Trump, to two-tier police, to two-tier justice systems, to rain, to trout tickling.
Yep.
You never know. It's like a box of chocolates, apparently. Talking of which. So, do you think a peace deal can be done between Russia and Ukraine? 62% of the audience say yes, it can. 37% say no, it can't. And 1% don't know still. So, if you want to get your last votes in for that, you are more than welcome. To the, just having a look what's coming in on the WhatsApp. Oh, let me check the Facebook. And also the Facebook as well. The WhatsApps say, and I quote, no, it's not a euphemism, but thank you very much for that. The most despicable thing about the slashing of the welfare budget is compounded by the assisted dying bill. Thank you. Got a question. Oh, no, here we go. Reform. Reform UK. Put two ferrets in a bag. And you'd have basically got Reform UK. Meanwhile, yeah. Who makes the offer to contact you for your survey and says, "I don't know"? I think that's admirable. I think that somebody can be able to say, "I'm not sure. You know, don't know. Undecided. I haven't got a couldn't give a ferret in a sack badge yet, but I'm sure we could put that in there."
No, and if you put two ferrets up your trouser legs, that's not how the world is at the moment.
Okay.
Okay.
Think about that, Mitch.
Yeah, I'll think about this. Meanwhile, Dawn's come in. Thank goodness for that. Got a question for the lovely panel. Well, anyway. Obviously, we don't know what hold Putin has over Trump. That's now. But do we think Trump will ever leave the White House voluntarily in 2028? You've got 2 minutes, panel. Do you think, or will he proclaim himself emperor for life? Sorry, I meant president. I meant, you know, supreme leader, barons coming up, you know, juniors. Come on, Tim, what do you think? Do you think Trump will go quietly? Or do you think he will rage against the dying of the light?
I think he will go. No, he won't be raging. I think he will go peacefully if he feels that he's been a success. And he will have to go anyway. But then will theoretically might be replaced by the hugely aggressive, underneath his skin, Vance, who's a
That's the one of the words. Bob Meyer, that's him. Let him go there.
Oh dear. Framed by Fox News.
Yeah. Framed by L'Oreal for his eye makeup. Jerry.
I'm thinking medically. He's elderly. He's obese. He lives off burgers. He may be leaving White House in a very quiet state.
Indeed. Well, yes. And Tim is obviously just wondering what language Melania speaks, aren't you? Still, you're still Slovakian. She's Slovakian, isn't she?
Yeah, so, yes.
We've got time for a very quick call, but then actually I haven't got time for a very quick call unless they're going to say something very quick. Okay, I'll get a hit the line. Morning call, you're live on TRE. We've got 50 seconds.
Yeah, just on that don't know thing. Don't know is useful because you know how many people responded. I mean, it was like 30% don't know. That's significant.
Thank you for that.
Bye.
Good to have you with the voice of reason then. Right, almost out of time.
Could be the same person every week.
Well, not knowing. That's me at the end of every show. Right then. Thank you very much for all your calls. In the final poll of polls then today says, peace between Russia and Ukraine. Yes, 62%. No, 37%. Don't know, 1%. So there you go. My thanks to today's panel who have been Timothy Stafford.
It's been a great pleasure as always, Charles. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Good to have you in as the white Christian straight man as well. And
mature. Don't forget the mature.
I'm mature. And also Dr. Jerry Hagan.
Are you implying I'm not Muslim?
No, absolutely not. But you know.
Thank you, Charles. It's been fun as always.
As always. Thank you all for your calls in. And your messages. We couldn't do it without you. I'll be back again next to tomorrow with Let's Talk. Stephen Ritson is up next.
The views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.